You teach at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. Now, that's the same place where the results of the polio vaccine trials were announced back in 1955. Take us back to that time. How monumental was the announcement of those trials?
Oh, the polio trials were just huge. Polio was a scourge, is the word that I've heard used. You know, so many parents were afraid on a day-by-day basis that their children would get paralyzed or die from polio. It was everywhere. And so when the vaccine trials were announced, it was a worldwide event that we had the possibility of doing something to protect our children against this disease that had been such a part of day-to-day life for generations.
So what's different now, some nearly 60 years later?
So the biggest thing that's different now is really simple. It's that we no longer have the day-to-day experience of polio. You know, then parents knew people. They knew friends or children of coworkers who had gotten polio, who had been personally affected by it. And so when you ask them about a vaccine, something that would protect against that disease, they could quickly call to mind people who had been hurt by the disease. And so the benefits were very real. Today, we've done such a good job of eliminating polio through vaccination that most parents of newborns today, they have no experience with this disease. They've never seen a case. Their parents may never have seen a case. And that just makes it a lot harder to explain why we need to be concerned about polio and why we might need to do something about it, or measles or any other diseases that we use vaccines to protect against.
So if you had direct experience with some of these devastating diseases, polio, for example, or whooping cough and measles, if you saw that and you saw how it affected children, you were more likely to consider the risks then?
It's easier to consider risks when you know why it is you're doing something, right? I will put my child at risk by, let's say, I have a 16-year-old. I just gave her the keys to the car, right? That's a risky thing to do, to give my child the keys to the car. But I do it for a reason, and I'm willing to face those risks because I know what the benefits are. When parents know the benefits of vaccines, when they have an intuitive understanding of just how bad these diseases are that we're trying to protect against, it makes it a whole lot easier to consider going through the process of vaccination.
So what is the risk-benefit ratio regarding vaccinations?
It's important to think about, to recognize that there's many different types of risks that we might talk about. I mean, the simplest one, you know, it's the obvious ones. Nobody likes being stuck with a needle, right? When I take my younger kids in, I promise them they're going to have some ice cream afterwards because nobody likes that. We know almost all vaccines have some chance of triggering fevers. That's not surprising, right? We're talking about something that works with our immune system. And when our immune system gets riled up, sometimes we get a fever. There are rare events that are more serious. You know, one example is, sometimes those fevers that I mentioned can get high enough that somebody might have a temporary seizure, just like anybody who has a high fever from a disease or anything else sometimes has a seizure. Those are temporary events. They don't generally have any long-term effect, but they're going to be scary to a parent, to the child. But the key to remember here is these things are very rare. Thousands of kids get vaccinated every day and don't have any of these things happen. But they can happen. And so we have to acknowledge that vaccines aren't perfect, just like nobody's perfect. And no medical intervention is completely risk-free. But vaccines are incredibly well-tested, incredibly well-documented, and compared to almost anything else that modern medicine offers us, it's one of the safest things we have available to us to protect ourselves and our loved ones.
Why have we been seeing a greater fear of vaccinations in recent years? Is it more than just being, say, decades removed from that firsthand experience with polio and measles and other diseases?
Well, it is more than that, although I do think that experience element is a big component of this. Historically, we know that even back when the smallpox vaccine was first being introduced, as soon as a community became relatively well protected and most people were vaccinated, you started to see in the newspapers and other venues people being concerned about the vaccine. You know, when the benefit was less visible to them, all of a sudden they had more, I guess, emotional space to worry about just what is this that's being put inside me. I also think that part of what's going on right now is we're in an era in which there are so many stories available to us through the internet. And the stories that people want to share are stories that are emotional. And if a mother believes that a vaccine has harmed her child, rightly or wrongly, I mean, regardless of whether that's true or not, that kind of story is the kind of story that tends to go viral. And it's really powerful. The problem is the story of vaccination that most parents observe is nothing, right? You go to your doctor's office, your child gets a vaccine, nothing major happens. They go out, they play with their friends, they don't get sick. That kind of story doesn't circulate in online discussion boards. It's boring, but that is the story of vaccination, because for the vast, vast majority of people, nothing happens, and that's exactly what we want.
So how do you then combat the power of those stories? It seems like just coming up with statistics isn't quite powerful enough.
No, statistics are never going to be the equivalent. I do think part of it is reminding people of why we do this, that the stories of what it's like for a child to have polio are scary. The broadcast tonight, one of the stories in it is a story of an infant, a seven-week-old infant with whooping cough, with pertussis. It's really emotionally powerful to watch this little baby trying to cough and survive and breathe in the face of that illness. And I'm not trying to scare people, because I don't think fear is the answer here, but we have to understand this isn't just like having a little cold or something you're going to get over in a few days. Most of the diseases that we use vaccines to protect against are things that caused major harm, killed people, caused brain damage, caused nerve damage, things like that. We had these vaccines for a reason. And when we remind ourselves just what it is we're protecting ourselves against, that can help.
Now, the infant that has whooping cough was too young to get the vaccination, so the child got whooping cough from someone else who wasn't vaccinated?
We never know exactly how it was transmitted, but most likely, yes. You know, most likely somebody who wasn't vaccinated or somebody whose immunity has worn off over time, right? Vaccines are not necessarily, not every vaccine will protect you for your entire life. Part of the reason why we try to vaccinate communities is the best way to keep ourselves safe is not to think of this as protecting ourselves. You know, somebody bumps up against me and I'm going to be protected, but to keep the disease from being anywhere near me in the first place. We protect young infants who are too young to be vaccinated by surrounding them with people who are protected, and thus that keeps the disease from getting close to them. Unfortunately, in this case, somebody, somehow, that disease got through to him, and so he got sick before he could even be vaccinated.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and I'm talking with Dr. Brian Sigmund Fischer. He's Associate Professor of Health Behavior and Health Education at the University of Michigan, and he's one of the experts consulted for the Nova special, Vaccines Calling the Shots. It airs tonight on SDPB TV. Now, Dr. Sigmund Fischer, I understand that you have your own experience with risks and benefits. You had to decide whether to get a bone marrow transplant. I'm wondering how that has any impact on the way you can perceive and understand how people are dealing with risks and benefits in a medical situation.
Sure. I think my own personal experience as a patient and as someone who is a scientist of risk and the psychology of risk, what it really made clear to me is this. We talk about risk, But risk is a concept that is fundamentally about a population. Right? I can have 100 children who are exposed to a disease like whooping cough. Some of them will get sick, others will not. When we vaccinate, we have many fewer who get sick and many more who are protected. But an individual child isn't 95% anything. They either get sick or they don't. And just like I, in my own medical trials, I was lucky in one sense that I survived. But I know other people who had very similar situations to me who did not. And that sense of randomness is very hard for people to deal with. What we try to do when we talk about vaccination is to remind people that it's not just an individual thing, that when we think and try to protect ourselves as a community, we actually protect ourselves as well. And that's in many ways what I think my personal experience facing health risks has taught me as I think about this situation.
Because you had what you were weighing a situation, whether you get you could either die in what a year or take the, you know, have the bone marrow transplant and live longer. I mean, it was
a, have a chance of living longer.
A chance of, yeah. So you were taking a chance.
So I knew that if I did the transplant, I had a good chance, a high chance that it would work out well and that I would have a long life. But I also had to accept that I had a chance that it would not work out and that I wasn't going to be, you know, 20% sick. I was either going to live or I was going to die. And those kinds of outcomes are just as real. It doesn't matter whether it was an 80% chance or a 60% chance or a 10% chance. If I died, I was going to die. I was fortunate. I was lucky. But that experience helped me to understand how we can think about risks, even very, very rare risks, like the severe risks of vaccines, which are so rare that from a population standpoint, sometimes it feels like we can dismiss them. But from a personal standpoint, we can't dismiss them because they do happen. And if you happen to be that unlucky one, that's unfortunate. But the vast number of people for whom those risks don't occur is also important, and that's what we're trying to focus on here.
How cyclical is the reaction and anxiety regarding vaccinations, given, you know, again, going back to 1955, when people had an experience with polio, they knew people firsthand, and then years later they don't, and then they start to get lax, and then the diseases start coming up. You know, there's the stories of whooping cough and measles outbreaks. Then you get to see that firsthand again. Is this in any way a cyclical thing?
It certainly has a cyclical element. As that personal experience comes back, we get worried again, and then we do something, and then it goes away, and it's more removed from us, and so we might be a little bit less worried. The thing to remember, though, is that in the modern world, the people around us are not the only source of potential risk. Right? I could be standing in Starbucks, and the person who's in front of me in line might have been from down the street, or that person might have flown from across the globe and brought a disease that was in that person's country right in front of me. I won't know. But we know plenty of people who travel the globe. And it's that mobility of the modern world that means that if a disease exists anywhere in the world, we are all potentially at risk for it.
Are people consciously ever thinking about risk and benefits?
Everybody thinks about risk sometimes. But of course, we can't go through life thinking about risk everywhere. We never do anything. You know, driving a car has risk. Walking across the street has risk. Eating a rare hamburger has risk. At the same time, it's important for us to pause and think about risks of actions that we take. And I have no problem with parents recognizing, hey, I'm going to be, my doctor is asking me to vaccinate my child. I would like to know enough to feel comfortable about this. I would like to know what exactly is this trying to protect my child against, and what are the things that might happen. the common things like, you know, my child's arm might be sore, and perhaps even the really, really rare things. But those questions are normal, and that's appropriate. But it's also just like the case when I gave my daughter the keys to the car, just because there is risk doesn't mean that we don't act, right? I didn't not give my daughter the keys because driving is risky, but I did do all kinds of things to try and make sure that it was as safe as possible.
To what extent getting vaccinations, you know, for a lot of us, it's just what you do. You don't think about it. I don't, you know, when I was growing up, you know, you got vaccinations and then you get older and your children get vaccinations. Was it just sort of a generational thing where that's just the way things were and you didn't really question it?
So part of this is the experience issue, right? You just did it in part because your parents knew why you did it. They didn't have to talk to you about it. It was obvious. Part of it is also the evolution of the relationship between medicine and doctors and patients, right? Medicine was a little more paternalistic generations ago. The doctor said, do this, and you did it. Today, we expect more of a shared relationship, that we can ask questions and that doctors will explain things to us. And that's probably a good thing in many ways. I think in the context of vaccination, we still are working out how to have that conversation comfortably, how to have a doctor say, this is really important and here's why, and have a mother or a father feel comfortable that asking a question doesn't label them as somebody who is, resistant. It's just curious, and that kind of curiosity is appropriate.
Well, Dr. Zygmunt Fischer, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
You're most welcome.